water and sky a perfect blue mirror. In the haze, oil refineries glint and steam in the sun out across the estuary. I hide in reed banks and sedge moors. A plump rabbit bubbles in my pot. Bless his little cottontail. Now all I've got to do is catch in my snare one little government department. No sweat. I possess file DA 1031-B. People have killed for it, so I do have my snare. All I have to do is understand it. Start reading, Terry boy.
Forty-eight hours to tidy up your affairs here at the department and prepare your case before a disciplinary tribunal. It will be held here in my office on Wednesday at 11 o'clock.
A drumhead court-martial. May I see a copy of the charges against me?
Of course. Here is Fortescue's report, neatly typed. At least our secretaries can still do a professional job.
I won't merely defend myself.
Meaning?
Meaning I intend to present the tribunal with evidence of treachery within this department.
Hearsay or proof?
Worried, Fortescue. This tribunal isn't going to be an end. It's going to be a beginning.
Sterley, I am in charge here. The minister himself will be present at this tribunal. I am not going to have you making wild and unsubstantiated accusations about my department being riddled with Russian moles. Do you understand?
If you do start making these lunatic claims, we will introduce prima facie evidence to prove that you've been involved in firebombings and political intimidation.
So, all I have to do is plead guilty to a framed-up charge of conspiracy to murder, and you'll drop all the lesser charges. Well, thanks. I'll face you both at the tribunal.
The impudence of the fellow. That loud-mouthed little provincial comes storming into my office, stamps about, laying down the law, then addresses me as if I'm some junior subaltern, and then storms out again.
Yes, Sir James.
I'll tell you what drives people like that. Pure, shameless ambition. They're wolves, Willie. They don't have an ounce of loyalty to this department, the slightest respect for their seniors.
I am a bit worried, Sir James.
You have every reason to be.
I mean, all this business about my activities up at Oxford, you know, my red days, it's all been gone into exhaustively several times. I have been cleared.
Even though I didn't recruit you, Willie, I've always had complete faith in your loyalty. Sterley is merely using your pass as a red herring.
A very red one.
It's quite obvious that rather than stand up and take responsibility for his actions, he's prepared to spread any sort of dirt to save his skin.
Thank you for your trust, Sir James. But what if he starts blurting out all the past history to the tribunal in front of the minister? It could destroy me.
Yes, Willie.
I need assurances, Sir James.
Willie, it has not escaped my notice that you had the same access to the ward machine pistol as Sterley did.
But lots of people have access to firearms, Sir James. Even you, Sterley, had a motive.
And you didn't? To discredit Sterley and his wild accusations?
Murder, Sir James, is not my style. I might not be a raving red anymore, but I still do retain a few principles. I joined this department because I believe that England, for all its faults, still defends certain basic decencies, still offers humanity a chance to reform itself without violence.
Very admirable, Willie. The drift of 1,000 Guardian editorials and Hampstead dinner parties, but not much to do with the real world. More than anything else I think of, it has been your soppy liberalism that has reduced this department to the mess it's in.
We've had this argument before, Sir James.
I cannot abide a mess, Willie. And that is precisely what my department has become.
Are you saying I am expendable, Sir James?
I have no intention of allowing your name to be blackened at this tribunal, Willie.
But after that?
We shall see.
One more question, James.
Yes, Willie.
Will the minister actually be attending the tribunal?
Unfortunately, he will be at a top-level meeting in Brussels at the throats of all our closest allies in NATO. It was arranged months ago, but that doesn't let us off the hook.
You mean Miss Taylor will be attending?
Oh, yes, I couldn't keep her out. The minister insisted.
Oh, thank you, Sir James.
And Willie.
Yes, Sir James.
About that weekend at my house in the country.
Yes?
I thought we'd hold a working weekend for the heads of department, try and put ourselves back together. Can you make it next weekend?
Of course, Sir James. That would be lovely. Oxford is so delightful at this time of the year.
File DA-1031-B. Sturley says this to Simpson. Taylor writes a memo to Fortescue. Fortescue disagrees with Sturley. About as exciting as watching paint dry. But the grand cause of all this aggravation, Socialist Attack magazine and movement. Should they squash it? Should they leave it alone? The department employed me to nick this file from Socialist Attack because the comrades got hold of it somehow or other. Socialist Attack are the only bunch outside the department to know why this file's so hot. It's time I struck a bargain.
Hello. Thought I'd drop in.
Oh, Linda. Hello.
Packing up?
Clearing my desk, yes.
I thought I should come round. I'm sorry you're going.
I'll be back.
It's just... Well, I hope you don't hold me responsible because of my report.
You were the scalpel, Linda. Very shapely one. Fortescue was the ripper. I've always looked on you as an ally.
Thank you.
You did a very competent job. Not that that'll get you anywhere in this department.
It does sometimes feel like it's falling to pieces.
You'll be attending the official lynching.
Your tribunal, yes.
Then reporting back to the minister.
That's the general idea.
Word for word.
If necessary. Why?
Because I'll have a statement to make. I'm writing it now. I'd like to be sure the minister hears it. Specific allegations.
And you want me to report them to the minister verbatim?
Right.
You're very brave, Tom, taking on the whole department, denouncing Fortescue in public.
Well, someone's got to. The whole thing's rotten. Smashing legs you've got, Linda. That's an observation, not a pass.
Thank you.
Want a drink? I've taken to keeping a bottle of scotch in my bottom drawer. Helps me keep sane.
Yes, a drink will be nice.
Paper cups, I'm afraid.
Government employees can't be choosers.
No. Well, cheers.
Cheers.
Mm. 10 years. 10 years I give this country before the Reds take over. Even sooner if Fortescue has his way. Do you know what the trouble is?
What, Tom?
The ruling classes. They've gone soft. Never had to work for a living. In the old days, they were hard. Ordinary people knew where they were. Now, well, folks need discipline, see? Without discipline, you can't have self-respect, and without self-respect, you've got nothing. That's what my old man drilled into me. Did I ever tell you about my dad, Linda?
No.
I think a lot about him when I'm sat here. Remember when I was a lad, only 5 or 6, the day he came home from war. You won't remember the country then, Linda.
No.
It was proud. Our neighbours decorated the whole street with Union Jacks. They didn't have 2 pennies to rub together, but they got those flags. A sergeant he was, and the Royal Marines. I was dressed in my Sunday best. Nervous, hadn't hardly seen him before, him being away fighting. About 11 in the morning, I was sitting at the bottom of the stairs. The front door opens. He stood there, in his uniform, like a rock, staring down at me. He leant down, picked me up, squashed me to him. And behind him, the whole street was a blur of folk shouting and cheering, waving their flags. Oh, I'll never forget that, I won't. More scotch?
No, I'd better not.
Do you know what happened to my dad? Fought for his country, but did his country care as it turned soft? It left him to rot.
So you fought for him?
Aye.
I think I ought to be getting along.
Oh, yes.
You'll still be reading out that statement tomorrow?
Russian tanks in Whitehall wouldn't stop me. You'll pass on what I said to the minister?
Of course.
Back on the hard streets of London. The rain drizzles. It's evening, though, so I can lurk in doorways. I'm in one particular street, Almeida Street, just over the way from the headquarters of Socialist Attack. Now, if my editor had just been shot and I had information every government from here to Timbuktu was panting to get his grubby fingers on, I would have security about me. You know, like Fort Knox. Well, they have got a minder. One overweight comrade who, having spent 10 minutes stamping the pavement, allowed his natural thirst to get the better of his revolutionary zeal and sloped off down the pub. There. He's deep in conversation with a fruit machine. And has a full pint on the counter. I checked. I crossed the street.
Alex, it's running out. Can you get me another typewriter ribbon? Alex? Ah, damn. Bet the lazy sod sloped off down the pub. Oh, well. Alex? Who are you?
Came to see you.
Yeah, I know that. Who are you?
It don't matter.
Yes, it does.
Came to see you about security file 1031/B.
Someone came to see our last comrade editor about security file 1031B and shot him. Alex!
He can't hear you. He's down the boozer aggravating a one-armed bandit.
Oh, damn.
Don't move.
Oh, no.
I won't use it unless I have to. I've got to talk. Sit down.
You killed Jack.
I didn't. Look, calm down.
Yes, you did. You're Terry Prince.
How do you know that?
Your picture's in all the papers, wanted for murder.
That's all I need.
And if your master told you to do it once, you'll do it again, jackal.
I didn't shoot your mate. Honest, I swear. I was set up.
Oh, yeah?
You had the file here, right? Someone employed me to nick it, that's all. And when I got here, he was dead. Shot.
And the Ward machine pistol, which the police are all denying was used? Looks very like the thing you've got in your hand.
I can explain it.
Yeah?
Look, if I'd come here to shoot you, I'd have done it already, right? I wouldn't be hanging around trying to talk to you while Boris rolls home from the pub.
Alex.
Sorry, Alex. They tried to kill me too, you know.
Who?
Wish I knew. Look, sit down. I want to talk.
Take that gun off me.
You won't try a bunk?
No. You have a captive audience. Start explaining.
I'm just an ordinary bloke. I'm just me.
Congratulations.
A tea leaf. A professional thief, that is. Good at my job. Every so often I'm employed to do certain jobs. I was told to do this official job, see?
How do you know it was official?
Look, in our trade, you can smell it, right? They did everything except stamp me card. I was instructed, turn over your office here, pick up the file. I picked up the tools from a locker at Blackfriars Station an hour before the job.
Mind if I make notes?
No.
What were the tools?
Plan of this office. Instructions on where to find the file, which cabinet. And a Ward machine pistol. Just been used.
Of course. And that didn't make you suspicious?
Well, not at the time, no. See, you carry a shooter on most jobs.
What, even breaking and entering?
It's called insurance in the trade. I didn't give it a second thought, not on a job like this. If it had been the crown jewels, that would have been another matter.
Of course.
I came here, did the job, half inch the file.
In that cabinet over there?
Right. Then I met your friend.
Here?
Just where you're sat, yeah. So I scarpered just as the boys in blue were conveniently arriving. An hour later and someone's tried to deep six me. With a Ward machine pistol. Within a week, my brother Keith is shot dead.
What?
Over Thamesmead.
What's he got to do with it?
Exactly. He was just a two-bit villain in someone else's Ford Granada. Not even the road fund people were going to bother him. But suddenly, it's not only the department, it's also the underworld. The heavy that tried to top me with a Ward worked for some cheap firm in Battersea. That's what I can't figure.
Up till now, the perspective I've been working on has been a department one. I mean, that is, the department that set this whole thing up. But all this new stuff...
Well, that's what I want you to explain. What's happening in the department? Who's doing this?
Want a coffee? Terry?
glorious food, even if the surroundings are a little bit outre.
It does have a somewhat raffish ambience, I agree. But if you want visual stimulation, go to an art gallery. Restaurants are purely gastric in function. Anything else is a distraction. That souffle was, perfection.
Yes, it was very nice, Mr. Fortescue.
Willie, call me Willie.
Willie.
Yes, Linda. Well, I thought as we're colleagues at work, we should get to know each other socially.
It is rather drab, the office.
I think I could say the same for some of my colleagues. Sir James, he's a bit of an old woman. Excuse my sexism. He disapproves of fun.
We're not in a very funny business, Willie.
Now, that's true. So you're settling in all right at work?
I think I'm finding out how the ropes work.
Indeed you are. What an apt metaphor. Offices are a complex of pulleys and wires, all pushing and pulling against each other. One committee against another, one section against another. I've been in the department 20 years, and I still don't understand all the subtleties of power.
20 years?
Afraid so. One more brandy.
I've had quite enough, thank you.
So, what do you think about the situation at the moment?
What? You mean...
The tribunal. This whole ghastly mess we appear to be in. Things haven't always been like this, you know.
Yes, I realize that.
Which way do you think the minister's going to jump? You should know.
Well, I'm sure he'll look at all the evidence, read the findings of the tribunal and the inquiries, then he'll make up his mind.
But you're the key to any decisions he'll make.
I think you overestimate my influence, Mr. Fortescue.
Willie?
Willie?
Not at all. Sturley will use the tribunal to make some wild and totally untrue accusations against me. It's your job to convey or not convey them to the minister.
Oh, dear. It is funny.
What?
I was having precisely this conversation only a few hours ago.
With Sturley?
In his blunt Yorkshire way, yes.
Sturley's not blunt. He's sawn off. I hope at least I wooed you with more civilized snares.
He gave me whiskey out of a paper cup.
Watch out. It'll be fish and chips out of an honest Yorkshire newspaper next. I'm serious, Linda. He can't be allowed to make these allegations.
How are you going to stop him, Willie?
Touché.
The department's been run for years by Simpson. Sir James Simpson. Real old pre-war stickler.
Sir James Simpson?
Yes, Terry. Oh, it's been pretty dead for years. Like most bureaucracies, its speciality seems to be fighting itself, accusing each other of being Soviet moles, that sort of thing.
How do you know, Chris?
Well, because one of the main weapons in bureaucratic infighting has always been leaks to the press. Each faction leaks stories advantageous to itself, damaging to its opponents. It enables journalists to build up a rough picture of what's happening. But in the last couple of years, it's got much nastier, culminating in the leak of that file.
Right.
As far as I can work out, the department is divided between an old guard, liberal in its politics, paternalist in its attitudes, and the young Turks, risen from the ranks, much more reactionary in their politics, impatient with democracy, learnt their techniques from the CIA in South America. If they didn't hate the Russians so much, they'd probably quite admire the KGB. Mm. As the economic crisis worsens, they want to get out on the streets and fight it, head on, including a whole range of dirty tricks.
Like shooting your editor.
And the million-dollar question, to use a capitalist quotation.
Now, they had the motive, the young Turks.
Oh, yeah, we'd published enough dirt on them. But is that the way to go about it? I mean, in such a public way, with a war machine pistol traceable back to your own department?
Meaning?
Well, it could be that one of them flipped his wig. He was starting a South American death squad thing, but there are much more subtle ways of doing it. I mean, Jack used to cycle to the office every rush hour. It could have been done then. No awkward questions. Or it could have been done at a demonstration, an unfortunate blow with an overweight truncheon, yeah, but I don't buy that.
What then? The Russians protecting their mole by putting the opposition out of business?
What a Machiavellian mind you have, Terry.
And I used to think fruit machines was bent.
No, I don't think it was Russians. I mean, there's nothing new for them in shooting good socialists in the cause of socialism, but this isn't their style.
Who then?
You sound angry.
My brother was killed, Chris. Who?
The old principle of qui bono.
Pardon?
Who benefits? If something occurs you can't explain, find out who benefits from it, then you might have the culprits.
Well, who's bono-ing who, then?
Well, it's only a theory. But the old guard seems to be doing quite nicely out of this whole mess.
Yeah?
Only a theory, Terry. And I sit here in my shabby little office, and the high and mighty sometimes deign to leak their secrets down a phone that might get cut off any day because we haven't paid the bill. We journalists only know what they want us to know.
Well, what about this Sir James, whatever his name is?
Simpson?
Yeah, where's he fit in?
Oh, God knows.
Have you got any names from the department?
Ah, it's funny you should ask that, Terence. 2 days ago, someone phoned us up.
Who?
Well, just an anonymous voice with a rather magnificent drawl. He told us that their internal inquiry had become very interested in a Mr. Thomas Sturley, who runs their left-wing surveillance section 4. From other sources, we've been able to ascertain he's their leading Turk.
Young Turk?
Yeah. We were even given his address in Salubius Croydon.
What are you going to do with it?
Oh, publish it, so that if any of our readers would care to demonstrate their outrage outside his dwelling, they'll know where to go.
What is it? The address?
Why?
I want the culprit. From what you said, it's someone else, but Sturley sounds as if he'll know who it is. I'll ask him some very hard questions in a not very nice way.
Kill him?
Only if he admits he did it.
Where have you been hiding this last week, Terry?
Holed up down on the Thames Marshes in the old docks. Safe as a house in me tent.
You'll keep in touch with me, Terry?
Yeah. I trust you. What's his address?
One very chaste orange juice for you, Linda. I have my customary brandy.
Thank you, Willie. So, this is the famous houseboat.
Famous?
Notorious, maybe. All those parties you used to throw in the old days. They've become part of office legend.
Ah, yes. Good old days. When Plonk was 10 bob a bottle. Girls wore suspenders. And you could rip round London in a sunbeam rapier without getting caught in endless traffic jams. Long time ago.
Why do you stay here?
I like the feel of the Thames beneath my feet. A touch of wildness in the heart of London. When I'm sad, I rock myself to sleep in the bosom of old Ma Thames.
Very poetic.
I don't mark. She brings me great comfort. Look at her out there. Black, mysterious, serene.
And stormy sometimes.
Yeah. We mustn't forget she's feminine.
You've done up the whole interior beautifully.
I feel a bit like that all-in whistler who collects antiques.
What do you mean?
Being involved with such barbaric things in my work, I need a bit of beauty, softness, to console me in the evenings. Must be very hard for you, a single female, working in the middle of so many sour men in grey suits.
I survive. We are supposed to be deadlier than the male.
You can't know many males. You have beautiful legs, Linda.
One advantage of working among so many sour men in grey suits, as you put it, is that they don't tend to make passes at you.
Oh, I'm far too old to make passes at girls. One engineers such things at my age through romance, subtlety, a shared emotion. That wasn't a pass, it was an honest observation.
I think I ought to be going.
No, don't. I wasn't being honest, I do fancy you. But that's not why I asked you to stay.
It's past midnight.
The tribunal is less than 12 hours away. Stay with me.
This is rather unprofessional.
Don't talk like a Dalek, Linda. You're a woman. You're meant to be a human being. That whole department's filled with Daleks. Great crab-like claws grabbing power from each other. Coldly calculating their advantage. Don't become like them, please.
Good night, Willie.
Good night, Linda. Mind the gangplank on the way out. Irony. To think it was I, in my youthful liberal innocence, who once argued so fiercely that women with beautiful legs, that even grammar school boys should be allowed within our gloomy citadel. My own enemies. All things change. All things stay the same.
Croydon, concrete heart of Bermudaland. 1,000 escorts stand poised on the concrete drives, revving with upward social ambition. Makes a change from better, see? Number 57, Laburnum Crescent. I make my way across a neat, complete lawn to a lighted window. The window is broken. Inside, before his typewriter, sits Thomas Sturley. A shotgun rests in his lap. Half his head has been blown away. Once more, truth lies dead, bleeding at my feet. And once more, flight is my only choice.
That was Deep Six, Part 3 by John Fletcher. Terry was played by Freddie Lees. Sir James Simpson, Conrad Phillips. Fortescue, Hubert Rees. Linda Taylor, Madeline Kem. Sturley, John Lindstrom. And Chris, Elwin Johnson. The programme was directed in Bristol by Brian Miller.